It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Let's talk.
John Brown.
Bramley Moore Dock, from slavery to football at the new home of Everton FC, is a new book by Bob Waterhouse. It examines Liverpool's ties with slavery from various perspectives, from plantation owner John Bramley Moore's personal involvement to Everton's historic link with slavery through some of its earliest patrons. Delighted, if that's the right word, to welcome onto the show Bob Waterhouse. Bob, good morning to you.
Good morning, Charles. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, indeed. This is a really, really... It sort of made me sort of stop in my tracks and have a think about this, because, you know, we're looking at the link between Everton, the Toffees, and slavery, and that's not something that sort of springs to mind, is it, first? It's the dark and murky past of perhaps all our great industrial cities in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think it particularly applies to Liverpool, because at the height of the slave trade, Liverpool was the city most implicated. It overtook Bristol and London. And by the late 18th, early 19th century, it was the number one slave trading port. So I think it's inevitable at some stage that both football clubs in the city have got links with the slave trade, albeit people whose families made the money in slavery rather than the people directly.
I mean, I suppose this is one of the things. If you are, you know, Liverpool is this great port city, as you mentioned, Bristol as well, which is another great port city, and the Causton Hall and all that sort of situation. So yeah. Not that I'm in any way, shape or form making apologies for the slave trade, obviously, Bob, but, you know, this is the 17th century, the 18th century, and slavery is a thing, and people are going to be making money out of it.
Well, people made a lot of money out of it, unfortunately, at the time, and that's the origins of Liverpool's wealth and certainly Bristol's as well.
So let's kick off then with, if you'll pardon the expression, with the name itself. So, you know, once again, we don't really think about the names of places are given. So Bramley Moore Dock. Now, this is where Everton are going to this is where Everton football, they're going to leave Goodison and they're going to have a new football club. So take us through that evolution and who Bramley and who John Bramley Moore is.
Well, the stadium has been under construction for the last 6 or 7 years, and the club has been looking for a new venue since the mid-1990s. There was a big campaign to keep the club in the city, where at one time it was planning to move to Kirby. The Bramley Moore Dock does that because it's only couple of miles from the centre of this Liverpool city, and it's got a prime location by the river. Now, they've had to drain the dock and build it on silt, which has been retrieved from the Irish Sea, and the dock itself dates back to 1848. It was called Bramley Moore after the guy who really pushed for it, who was the chairman of the Liverpool Docks and Harbour Board, John Bramley Moore, whose wealth was derived from, as you said earlier, from his plantation in Brazil, which he owned and participated in the Brazilian slave trade, although he later became a politician. And, in true politician mode, he denied all links with slavery and was very quiet on the subject. And, of course, slavery itself had been abolished in Britain many years before 1848, but his wealth derived from the slave trade with Brazil, which was still ongoing.
And Everton Football Club itself, I mean, that's because if my old grey matter said me correctly, is there a link with Methodists? And how is Everton? Because Everton is one of the oldest football clubs. It's the only one that's been in the top flight, isn't it? All pretty much continuously.
Aston Villa as well has been up there, but I think Everton have been there longer than anyone else. It was based on a Methodist church, St. Domingo's. Interestingly enough, there's also a link with slavery there because the name St. Domingo comes from the island of Hispaniola, which was originally called Santo Domingo. And the guy who created the St. Domingo estate was actually a slave trader who plundered quite a lot of treasure from a French ship off the island of Hispaniola.
So, I mean, what sort of sparks you? Because you're an Everton fan, presumably. This is some sort of dark Action Stanley type plot to discredit Everton. So
absolutely not. I'd like to make that very clear because it's already on social media. I've been accused of being a cop-out and that and the other. I'm actually an Everton season ticket holder, and I'm not trying to discredit the club, who've done an incredible job in building this magnificent stadium. But I just want it being recorded that slavery is something you just can't escape from in the city of Liverpool, and actually affects both clubs.
Yeah. Do many Evertonians know? Because, I mean, I've got some really good friends of mine who are Evertonians, and I'm sure they've got absolutely no idea of that. I mean, I suppose it's not something people of my generation, who were at school in the 70s, we didn't even discuss the slave trade, but, it wasn't really something that we looked at in a way that we are looking at now, which is now front and center because of what happened in places like, for example, Colston, Statue of Colston being thrown into the water, etc. Is it a part of a history that you think that we should be at least recognizing? Because all great ports have that dark side to their history.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I think the city council have got this one right because some years ago it was mooted to have a street name changing policy, which I think is ridiculous. And I think the best policy is what they've decided on, which is to have representative plaques, which explains the history of the name and the links with slavery and doesn't try and wipe it out of history. Because I think, not rewriting history is one of the messages of the book, which is why I think we should acknowledge, recognize the history of the city, not try and ignore it.
And if you look at the way that Liverpool sort of as becomes, England's most important port city, I mean, it's quite incredible the way it goes up. And you can credit Liverpool for an awful lot of things, including, you could almost argue, that because of the amount of rock and roll music in the UK, because of the American imports coming through. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that, the blues and rock and roll. And, from that, I'm going to mention the B word or the M word, the Merseybeat and the Beatles, all come because that is the point of entry because you can't get US records in except by Liverpool.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that the trading links, which, initially were established with slavery, later became cotton and this sort of thing, has laid the basis for the importation of these records, which weren't readily available in other British cities in the 1950s, early 60s. And you're absolutely right. That's one of the reasons why the Mersey Beat sound took off.
And also, and the city, yeah, and also, has, yeah,
closely with America.
And also, yeah. the thing is, Liverpool's particular outlook on the world, because I try and explain what Liverpool is like to Spanish friends, and I say it's a city like unlike any other because of the immigrant. I mean, I know we're talking about slavery, but the immigration experience that Liverpool has, you know, I mean, the links it has to, you know, across the water to Ireland, and it gives the town, it gives the city and the people an outlook on life that is singular in its aspect, but, you know, unlike anywhere else in the UK. I think we could argue on that one, Bob.
Well, I think, you know, probably the closest one is Glasgow, actually, which also has strong links with Ireland as well. But, yeah, I mean, the Scouse accent itself is fascinating because it literally only started to exist in the very late 19th and early 20th century with the influx of the Irish and actually another group which is less well recognised, the Welsh. You know, if you go back to mid-19th century, and even when the club was being formed in the 1870s, most Liverpudlians were talking with a Lancastrian accent, not a Scouse accent. And this is not well known, really, amongst the public at large.
So, you know, Liverpool, it booms, you know, it goes to the war, gets, you know, gets blitzed as well. The Liverpool blitz is even perhaps, you know, more hard hitting than the more famous sort of London blitz as well. And then we see a decline in the port industry in general, like several great sort of industrial centres. You know, I remember visiting Liverpool, you know, on a school trip in 1978 and thinking, blimey, going to the, you know, what was then the original Cavern Club and thinking, oh, this is, you know, we did the cathedral, but there were still large areas of sort of basically bomb areas that still left over from a hangover from the Blitz.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the decline of Liverpool dates back quite early to the late 19th century because the port, was unable to accommodate the larger vessels that were being built because Liverpool, with the River Mersey having such a big tidal flow, it really lost its way very early. And as you say, the World War II contributed to that as well. So the book does chart the rise and the fall of the city, but rather more optimistically, it also looks at the regeneration of the city in more recent days, which the stadium is going to play a major part.
Now, back in the early 90s, believe it or not, I was the editor of an international property magazine, and it was when the MDC, the Merseyside Development Corporation, were in full flow. So I got invited up and taken to New Brighton and places like that, where they were building new roads. Right. Well, you will know then the huge amount of investment that went into that. And at the time, and I remember, you know, there were a couple of things that were, you know, because obviously Docklands was going in full throw. Cardiff Bay was just starting, and I thought, this will never work. Shows how much I knew. But also, I was, you know, the amount of investment that put to taking, you know, to redeveloping and regenerating Liverpool and making it the city that it is today.
Yeah, it all dates back, really, this to a very senior Conservative politician called Michael Heseltine. Now, Conservative politicians aren't naturally popular in Liverpool. However, this guy's an exception, and he was recently awarded the post of Freeman of the City because it was his bright idea to make Liverpool really what it is today, a major tourist hub. And he did this initially through investing in the Albert Dock, which is, you know, a major tourist venue to this day. Then there was the Liverpool Garden Festival in the 80s, which in the long term wasn't as successful. But it's been followed through with huge investment in the dock area. And one part of the city that hasn't benefited as much is the North Liverpool area, north of the Pierhead, which has been, you know, an area of industrial dereliction throughout my lifetime, really. But the Bramley Moor Dock project is just one of a number of projects which hopefully is going to revitalise this declining part of the city, which is one of the poorest areas of the entire country.
So when it comes to writing this book about Bramley Moor Dock, what's your sort of starting point, and how do you sort of structure it so it doesn't seem like to the uninformed that you're merely having a pop at Everton?
Well, the starting point is the stadium, and as I've hopefully demonstrated in this interview today, I'm hugely enthusiastic about it, and I think it's an incredible project which is not just going to revitalise the club, it's going to help revitalise part of Liverpool, which has been in huge long-term decline and is in huge need of regeneration.
I'm going to ask you this question because obviously today's headlines are all about the misfortunes of Spurs and their sort of post-apocalypse and you know the fact that they are skirting on the edges of disaster. And in the nicest possible way, Bob, being an Everton fan is a test of faith. Than many of us would probably just give up and go and support one. And there's another book you've written, which I talk about manufactured fans. You know, you could go in and support one of them their glamour clubs. But being an Evertonian is surely a test of faith, especially in these times when the other half of the city is apart from pilgrims aside being shot down. You laughed at that one. Is soaring into the stratosphere. So how is your outlook on life, Bob, tempered by being a toffee?
Well, I've got an additional burden in living in the southwest of England.
Oh, blimey. So
which is not a general burden because it's a great place to live, yeah. But it means that my fortnightly journey to watch the Blues is quite a long and arduous one. But I am a member of West Country Blues that sends a coach up to every home game, and interestingly enough, on Wednesday we've got a double decker bus going all the way up to Goodison and back, which is a round trip of 10 hours. So we make an enormous sacrifice to watch our club, and I've got to say this season it's been a pretty hard chore to go through, but there are some green shoots under David Moyes, and I believe with the stadium and the recent takeover by the Friedkin Group, there are signs of optimism for the future.
Yes, the prodigal has returned, which must have put a smile on your face. Come on, I mean I just love the idea of West Country Blues. That sounds like that sounds like an album or a festival that we should be organising, Bob.
Yeah, it does have a certain ring to it, doesn't it? But I've got to say, it's a great club, and we must make one of the longest journeys of any sports club in the country to watch our beloved club. But I've got to say, there's fans from all over the world, and the amount of American fans never ceases to amaze me. And the first book that you briefly mentioned, Everton, the Fans Born, Not Manufactured, has sold well over 100 copies in the States, which is... It's fantastic.
Well, you see, if you build, field of dreams, if you build it, they will come. What are you hoping that people are going to take from the current book?
Well, I mean, although, the slavery issue is there, I mean, in terms of the stadium itself, it is a really positive message of regeneration and also preserving the architectural history of the area. Many aspects of the site are listed and have been preserved, like the dock walls and the hydraulic tower. And the architect, which is another American guy, Dan Mace, has gone to great steps to create a stadium that blends in with the environment. So its brickwork is complementing the brickwork of the local warehouses. And I think he's done an incredible job, because I've got to say, so many of our recent new stadiums are fairly soulless places.
Yeah.
And I think with our fans, that was never going to be the case. But he's created an environment which is very fan-friendly. The fans are very close to the pitch, and it should be a cracking atmosphere.
Yeah, and that perhaps is the most important thing, because, you know, in this world where stadia tend to be multi-functional sort of entertainment venues, you know, okay, you know, we've got Charlton away, we got Charlton at home next week, and then Taylor Swift arrives or something like that. You need, people tend to forget the connection and the importance, the visceral importance there is between a city like Liverpool and its football clubs and its people, because they have grown up and that, you know, has always been the people's game.
Yeah, I mean, the stadium will be multifunctional, don't get me wrong, but, you know, football is first and foremost, and, you know, gigs and things like that are, you know, secondary to football, really, but they're going to be there and hopefully bring in much needed revenue in the summer months when the stadium's not been used for football.
What are you hoping that people are going to take then from the book, as I said before?
Well, positive message about the stadium and the regeneration of the city, but not forgetting the histories. Yeah, as you say, dark links to slavery in the past, which should be remembered, not necessarily dwelt on, but should not be ignored.
The book is called Bramley Moor Dock. Thank you for all the listeners who are sending me in pictures of Liverpool waters and all the you see, they listen, you see, they're sending me in pictures of the development as it goes along. The book is called, as I said before, Bramley Moor Dock. It's out next week, isn't it, Bob?
It's out on Monday, will be available from Amazon and other book retailers.
And you can order as well via our own virtual bookstore. Do you do the social media thing? Can we find you online, Bob?
Yeah, I've got a Facebook and Instagram site, and I'm going to be pretty active, particularly on the Instagram, plugging the book over the next few weeks.
What's the Instagram? Is it name or handle, whatever the young folk call it? Is it Bob Waterhouse or Robert Waterhouse or?
Well, I've got both, actually. But, probably Robert Waterhouse is where they'll find me. Yeah.
Well, listen, congratulations on the book. Look forward to it coming out next week. The book is called Bramley Moor Dock. Fascinating stuff from the man who wrote... What was the other book called? Liverpool FC Ruined My Life or something. Wasn't that one of the other ones?
The other one was, Liverpool Football Club Ruined My Life, 60 Years of Supporting Everton.
That's a brilliant title. Yeah. Bob Waterhouse, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thanks very much, Giles, and I hope you've got the warm weather that we're being sadly denied over here at the moment.
I'm not going to lie to you, Bob, because that would be bad luck. We'll talk about that off air. Bob, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Giles. It's been a pleasure.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.